Well, here we are, Ira. Just 2 weeks after our last podcast recording session. You know, I thought it'd be a little bit longer until we have one, but you know, I woke up this morning, saw a 7-2 loss after, you know, being up 6-3 on like Wednesday or Thursday. And it's just like, all right, well, let's talk about the downfall of my team. I think it's time, you know, I think we've done a decent job this year not overly talking about our teams. It's time for my team's postmortem. I think it's time to throw in the towel. Last we spoke, you know, I was not sure which way it was going to go. I was kind of optimistic that I could get back in. And we'll dive into all that today. But how are you doing, Ira?
I'm doing all right, Paul. Yeah, thought I'd read a little something for the occasion. I wore black. Ikadah, Bikadash, Merabah,
Diabon,
Diabron, Uribron. You know, I got my Sidor out for the occasion, but you know, Mortar's Kaddish I think it's been up and down year for Paul. I think you came in a little optimistic. You were kind of willing for the season to go either way, and this is the way it went. But you've given us some good pot talk the last few weeks, so I'll give you credit for making the dog days of the season get interesting, at least for the league. That's something.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think my team was very teasy this year. Like, obviously, it wasn't talented to start, but I made some moves. I kind of kept it interesting. I got some good matchup luck earlier in the year, I think, and I caught some people, and I was able to stay around 500 early on for a little bit. And then after that, kind of just nothing seemed to click. It always felt like guys were getting hurt at the wrong time, or like, you know, I was fine hanging in, and on Sunday, one or two guys would, you know, go game time decision, then go out, and there's nothing to do. I think that was really emphasized this week with like Kyrie just suddenly, he has a thumb injury, but he's going to play. And, you know, we'll get into how I came about Kyrie, but like then suddenly he's out for, you know, a longer term. Jakob Poeltl was supposed to come back this past week. Now that got pushed back. You know, Wagner fortunately came back, and it's like, then everyone else kind of crashed down and missed some games. So, you know, even my ad drops, it seemed like, you know, guys I was picking up from streaming would kind of randomly get hurt on the day that they were going to play the game, and there was no adapting to that. So just things didn't really go my way. I guess we should probably talk about how we got here. Because I think the true misery index portion of this pod is that I traded Jokic away with all good intentions of like, I know like this might go poorly, but like, if there's a way to get back into the season, it's kind of doing a 4-for-1. And I traded, it was Durant, Kyrie, Kuzma, and Dylan Brooks for Jokic. And didn't really bring me any good fortune. Justin, I was up on him early in the week, and then that turned. That was a pretty tough matchup with him where I lost 6-3, or 6-2. We tied in steals, which he had pulled one at the last waning minutes of his games. I lost blocks by 2. I lost rebounds by 8. And, you know, I had 3 less games than him because of these late injuries. I was 7 threes short of him. So just really kind of a tough break there. And then just the obliteration by Levy this past week to put me out of my misery. you know, nothing was really that close. Like, points, he beat me by 1 point to kind of add insult to injury there, I think. But you know, not such a fun way to end the season. Like looking at my roster, like, no, it's not impressive, but also there's like, it's like, okay, like there could be a team here. But it just never really seemed to click this season, which does happen. Like, you know, I always say that year that I got kind of screwed and didn't set my lineups like twice all year. And like that was the year that I think Andrew beat Trev like 8-0, even though they're both playoff teams, for me to miss out on the playoffs. Like I always said that year was like that also, where like my roster, not that my roster this year was good, but I think that year my roster was pretty good, and just not like no one played well the same week all season. And I felt like that was kind of what happened this year, on top of my roster not being built great from the start.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I mean, yeah, league-wide, I think every team was a little, I mean, most teams, you know, haven't been, like, crushing it, obviously, and so you were just one of the many that were, you know, muddling along. I mean, definitely. I mean, I think when I looked, it was like seven out of the or six out of the last seven matchups you wound up being going down. So there was definitely a slide. I guess with Franz being out, I don't know. There weren't really that many injuries to indicate you were gonna take a big dive. But
when your team's being held up, by scraps and Pirtle and Wagner kind of went out at the same time. Probably if I was going to move Jokic for like a move like that, I probably should have done it 2 or 3 weeks earlier, you know, to allow for some variability.
Yeah. I guess it's like you look at your draft board. You had a lot of late picks, obviously, but you didn't really hit anybody. I mean, I know you're thinking about keeping Kuminga now, but for most of the year, you didn't have him, nor was he effective until like the last few weeks. Jaden Ivey. I mean, he's been rosterable, but he's been fucked around with in Detroit like everybody else has been. Fultz was hurt with the Magic. He's been kind of like a nothing burger. You took Ertl in the sixth round, and he's been underwhelming, I guess, with the injury. So, yeah, Sengun you hit. Sengun, I think, or at least lives up to a third round value, we can say, at least. Not a bad
pick. Yeah, and I think Pirtle, if not for the injury, I think he kind of was playing at least at his draft value. His assists were kind of up this year. He kind of tied in with my big man, kind of do everything. I probably leaned a little too hard into like centers that aren't centers. And when I realized like 3-4 weeks in that, like, oh shit, like my team's only going to win if I win steals and blocks every week. That strategy didn't really pan out too well. There's some warnings there. I think maybe this is kind of the worst. This is probably the worst Paulkin season. I know I had one other like tank out year, but like this one kind of nothing went my way. I think this Jokic trade was probably in the long run silly. I think I'll recover fine from it. Like, I don't think it's going to like destroy me for years and years, but like, it's a lot easier to build around Jokic and like Mitchell than probably the slew of characters I'm going to wind up with going into next season. And next season is kind of a bust now. It probably will not have been worth it. I guess my mindset going into that trade was like, I've seen how things go. Like, people get it. And Jokic is always healthy, which is like, has been pretty good. But like, things change really quickly in this league. Like, one injury to your star, you know, changes the dynamic. Like, look at the guys I just traded for. Kyrie was like a lock top 15 guy like 2 years ago, and now he's kind of really on the fringes of it doesn't seem like there's that much interest in him from playoff teams, relative to what there had been. I think people are scared of him. Kevin Durant like doesn't interest people as well as he used to because of his injuries. And even though he's putting up the numbers and, you know, he is putting up top 10 value over the last few weeks, people aren't as interested in him either, you know? So it's tough. I think, you try to capture the Magic but things change quickly. I thought, hey, if I could go for it for this season and get back in, it'll be worth it. But, now next season has to be a good season for me.
I think looking at the Jokic deal, I mean, it's hard for me to necessarily make sense of the maneuver. I think it's another issue entirely, the trade market, I think, which you're beginning to delve into. And I'm curious to get your take on how, how my competitors are analyzing.
Oh, well, I'm not going to air that information out on this podcast. Come on.
All right. Well, I mean, it sounds like you're indicating that there's just not much enthusiasm right now in your studs.
I'd say, as much as there has been in past years. That's my thought. You know, in the past, when you announce a trade block, usually there's more, and that could just be more of a sign of the league as well. But like, you know, in past years, people are probably knocking down Trev's door for Kyrie and KD. And this year, probably not as much so.
Maybe. I mean, I guess I'd be surprised if nobody wants to pay for KD, but I mean, maybe, I don't know. I know last year he was hurt a lot, but I don't know. He's shown enough health this season that you would think somebody would be willing to take the plunge. Obviously he's not a 5-year keeper, but you can still imagine him being useful for 2 or 3 years. I think you keeping KD anyway is not the worst end game either.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Somebody has to go though. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it comes down to what you're able to move these guys for. To have any salvaging of this deal, you kind of, yeah, like you said, I think you need to make next season a more of a strong showing to justify the Jokic maneuver at this point. I mean, if you get nothing out of it for next year, then, yeah, I mean, it's
a bit then it was all faster. For nothing, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, I mean, Jokic, you figure he's got at least another 5 years of being, like, a top 10 fantasy player. And that might be lowballing it, honestly. He could be top five for the next 5 years. With the way he, I don't know, with the way he uses his body, and like he doesn't require speed. The passing's going to be there forever. The shooting should linger. Injuries and could be an issue.
Well, as you say, again, he never gets hurt. That's kind of like the best availability or the best abilities of availability. He's always healthy.
Yeah, that was so baffling about your decision here.
It is bad too, considering that's been my mantra for many, many, many years. Since the last time I drafted Emeka Okafor back in high school, that's always been my fantasy philosophy, is just to not draft injury risk guys. But look, I really wanted to play. I don't know what it was about the season. I really felt like I wanted to play. I felt like the top teams weren't crazy dominant, or they were an injury away from not being crazy dominant. And I just felt like there was a way to get back in. I think there's a way to pivot out of this too. I felt like it was worth the risk to try to play. You know, as you always say, like, you got to play, right? Like, that's what it's all about. So let's see if I could play and make it happen. I probably should have gone earlier. I think that's my only regret, really, is not making a move earlier here. So, yeah.
And bringing Durant and Kevin. I don't know. To me, Kyrie's the same fucking player he's been. I mean, he's got like 25 games for the season. And, you know, there's been like 45 games so far. I don't know. So, I mean, the guy just is not reliable enough for our format. I mean, you want to take the dice roll you can, and hopefully he plays in the playoffs when you need him and you make the playoffs. But I don't know. He's always been kind of like a snake oil. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the issue is that there was nobody to trade with. So I think maybe this is why you turned to Trevier when you wanted to get something. I don't know what Corey's thinking is. I mean, there's definitely some assets to be had on Corey's team, but he doesn't really seem interested in trading. And it's a bit of a mixed bag anyway. But you're ahead of the market. So the fact that you're raising the white flag, you think somebody's ready to, pay for your guys. And I guess I would say the only reason maybe the market's a little less into it this year is that maybe they look at the top and see, you know, Andrew's team, who already has plenty of good guys. Justin's team's up there. My team's up there. That's a tough top three to want to take a swing against in the playoffs.
Yeah. But look, like, guys, here's the thing, right? Like, two of those three are going to be up there every year, right? And, like, so what are people waiting for? Like, if you want to compete, like, go – like, if you really want to win a championship, make a move and go for it, you know? Like, worst case, what happens – you don't win and you rebuild the next season. That's really what it comes down to. I think there's probably also a hesitancy of, like, people probably want to give it another 2 weeks and say, oh, like, am I actually going to be a playoff manager even if I didn't make this trade? And like, or am I going to fall out? Or, like, if I make this trade, someone's going to make one after me and I'm still going to miss and I'm screwed. Like,
I don't know. Yeah. That defensive mentality, I think, is silly at this point, considering, like, the trade deadline's like 3 weeks away. Like, I don't know. To me, if you swing a deal now, unless you're about to play like Justin and Andrew in like two of your next 3 weeks, like, you should have the playoffs secured. I mean, there's, I don't know. I mean, I think, well, I mean, to me, there's only three teams that are actually secure for the playoffs at this point. There's enough spots that, like, if you make a deal, you should be able to edge out the other contenders.
Also, making deals should be easier now. Like, the Conley Accords put a framework in place to make deals. Like, you know, Justin can't just, like, basically screw his way into a deal anymore. So, like, come to me with your deals. I'd rather someone else win than Justin, obviously. Like, come on. And he's going to complain about this to me tomorrow, I'm sure, and guilt me over it. But, like, it's true. If all things are equal, like, where am I going to lean to here? Probably, like, you know? So,
yeah, you have been a strong advocate of the boycott IRA at all cost movement, so... Yeah, I know you're looking.
Well, you're cheap. You're cheap, also. So, you know, that's part of it with me usually. But
Cheap. I think I'm a very fair trader. That's the beauty of working with me.
You would think that about yourself, Ira. You'd think that you're fair. It's just not, you're frugal. You're frugal.
It's unlikely that I'm going to pay a premium price. You have me over a barrel, I'll pay a premium price. But I mean, I don't know. There's enough guys out there. I like to find
I mean, I would think
the
you'd be someone trying
riffraff.
to, I would be thinking you'd someone trying to trade to get more competitive with Andrew and Justin, but I guess maybe the spreadsheet doesn't work for the guys on my roster for you.
Hey, look, we've already had a little bit of discussions, Paul. But I'm not a my picks are precious. If I'm going to give those up, I mean, I need to do it for the right piece. I need like over the top championship type pieces. I don't just throw away my Nikola Jokic, for some often injured garbage. So yeah, it's different mentality with these things.
Yeah, I know part of this also is the bitterness that like I wouldn't take your often injured garbage last year for Jokic.
Whoa, 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 whoa. My often injured garbage that you speak of won a championship. So, I mean, come on. Clearly, it delivered.
You lucked into a year that none of them got injured. I mean,
I don't remember all of, I mean, we're talking about it was like Lauri Markkanen, Pascal Siakam. I think
AD,
Kristaps was on the table.
Kristaps, yeah.
I guess maybe AD. But hey, look. We'll see what happens, but AD's having an all NBA season. Kristaps remains very good. Lauri's very good. All these guys are having nice
Yeah.
years.
Although, no, come on. Who would blame you for thinking that the Lowry thing was like a 1 year kind of blip? I mean, he had done nothing for many years before that, you know?
Well, to
And
be a top 30, sure, but
KP's hurt now, right? I mean, like,
yeah, he's. I guess it's slight. The Celtics like rest all their guys. That's just kind of their strategy. Because I mean, it's a good strategy, I think, for their playoff chances. But yeah, they're all very good. But yeah, and I mean, I think even the fact that even if you figure two of them might not help you in the playoffs, the fact of the matter is, if you did that deal with me, I would not be able to beat you in the playoffs, which is probably like half the battle right there.
in hindsight, that is probably true. And yeah, it is what it is. Look, moving forward, I'm optimistic it'll be a fun rest of the year. I plan to set my lineups unlike certain people and just stay in my 10th spot, get that number one draft odds. Hopefully finish out strong enough for that. I have a matchup with Corey coming, I think, but he did beat me last time we played, which is again part of the misery of the season, just losing to the wrong people and getting screwed over on Sunday and all this kind of stuff. So, I'll hang in there. But look, I think we should move to the rest of the league here. This was an interesting week. A lot of big matchup scores. And now we have a really, really tight playoff pack here. Between fifth and ninth, we have a total of three games difference. So like literally this could swing every single week to the end here. We have Levy leading the Packer now at 500. And it's still pretty wild that like probably well we're on pace for like two like around 500 managers to get into the playoffs. Levy at 500, Duran one game back of him, John is one game back of Duran, Garrett's a half game back of John, and then Eric another half game back. Who do you like to come out of this pack right now?
Right. I mean, I will say I'm just bouncing around real quick. I mean, we're at the point in the process where you can kind of just look at the schedule and assess who's in a nice position. For example, like Garrett's team, he just lost to Justin, but he's done with Andrew. So he's got me a week 19. That's a pretty good schedule. And he's got a Corey on there. I don't know, a Dank at the finish line. Levy's team. He's done playing. He has to play Justin in 2 weeks, but no Andrew, no Ira. Like,
Yeah, he gets three of the two of the bottom the two bottom teams and Eric, who's currently in ninth. So that's the big matchup. If he could separate against Eric there, that'll be pretty big, I think.
yeah, like I would say, like, nah. Like, I don't see John making a move. John's about to play. Is it playing Andrew right now? Gonna get probably stomped. So knowing John might, if nobody makes the move, John probably makes it, because that's the kind of thing John would get. John would get sixth and get his like 5% lottery odds and make the playoffs.
You know what's interesting though, John, the last few weeks, he has a 7-2 win, 2-7 loss, 7-2 win, 6-3 win, 2-7 loss. And then prior to that, it's like a lot of close ones, but like, this is not John's strategy. John wants 5-4 wins. You know, this is not a normal John team here.
Yeah, I mean, John seems a bit, I mean, I don't know. Now that Dame's kind of a bit of a decline, it's, I mean, his strategy, it might be time to reassess, I think. And, you know, and he's making it work with like the Kobe Whites and the Alex Carusos of the world. Mike Conley's out now. I mean, I don't know. Like Jalen Williams kind of fits. But like Anthony Simons was out a while. Portland's a mess. I don't know. He might still backdoor it, just because, like I said, like if people don't want to make the moves, like John's team is built to just like hang around.
Yeah, but the problem with John's team is like, you're right. Like he's kind of in a weird spot where his superstars are aging. And so like going forward, he doesn't have a great, I guess he has Chet. I guess he will keep Chet probably for next season with Steph probably, right?
Well, Chet's the late keeper.
Chet is the late keeper, huh? Lucky bastard. All right, so I guess he's not in he's not in bad shape then.
His keepers remain strong. It's just like, I don't know. The team's pretty meh. And I mean, the Warriors might drop out of the playoffs entirely, in which case, you know, Steph might not bust his ass down the stretch either.
Yeah, and you wonder, well, I guess for John, like, maybe this is the year that John just like says, I'm not going to trade next year for this year, because like he's not really in a good spot necessarily. Like it would take a bit to upgrade this roster.
He always does the minor maneuvers. John never swings big unless like, I don't know, who's like the huge 3-point guy that he could land for his roster. That's the only player that he would target. But you know, like he doesn't want to swing big for pieces. Like he's not going to trade a fourth rounder to get a center, you know?
Right. Yeah. He wants to come in third place every year.
Yeah. So I would just say John's not making it unless the Gary Levy, Duran, Eric don't, you know, level up. I mean, Eric's another team. Eric's schedule is pretty soft too. But it's a weird schedule, just that like he's got Shavier and Corey to close out the year. But he's currently playing you, and he's got Garrett and then Justin. So it's kind of like, if he goes for it, just like plays 500 ball, he'll search into the playoffs at the end of the season.
Well, so he's actually a really good candidate where he should probably make a trade this week and strengthen up for the next 2 weeks. but take me out, then try to like Garrett's the head to head that actually really matters. Like it is funny, Justin has all these teams that are kind of bubble teams in the next 2 weeks. So they all got to go through that, but like then, yeah, it's Garrett and Levy head to head. So like any damage he does in those matchups are going to help him double. And then he just needs to blast Trevier and Corey, which by that point, like those could be 8-1 matchups, probably assuming he's bolstered his roster a little bit, you know,
like but definitely 7-2s you should be able to get.
You almost have to count on minimum 14-4 those 2 weeks. And then just say, all right, like if I do that, what's my back end number? I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah. I mean, nobody has, I mean, going through them, nobody really has like an awful, the worst schedule would be like a me, a Justin and Andrew that you have all coming up, which I don't think anyone has. Like, but I mean, if we want to talk, he's a little higher up, but like Dank, for example, right now is facing me this week. He's got Andrew in 2 weeks. He also has to face Duran and Garrett down the stretch. Like,
and he only has one of Trevier and Corey. He does have me, but
you'll at least set your lineups, which might be more than some of our managers.
But like that said, Dan is like Dan is still 10 games ahead of those. Like at minimum 10 games ahead of those guys. So like as long as Dan needs to shoot for 4 or 5 losses basically this year, like against good teams. Do you really think there's a real risk of Dan falling out of the playoffs?
We would need a lot of people to go for it. And I mean, I guess, I don't know. I feel like the mood doesn't seem to be there for people to swing big. Like, I feel like if people wanted to throw picks at you, you would make a deal with them.
So, and here's the thing, like, people need to go now. Like, for Dan to be out, like, three managers need to go for it now, basically.
Well, the issue is there aren't enough assets to be had. I mean, unless, I don't know. I guess the Trevor wants to sell, but Trevor is a weird manager. I don't know what the deal is with Corey. He doesn't seem to want to set his lineup, so does he want to make a trade? I don't know. So you're the only one who's really, actively selling.
Yeah, sounds nice for me.
I guess the whole point of this podcast was actually to just have a market prop-up episode for Paul. That was really why you brought me on today.
Guilty as charged, Ira. But like, I think Dan, differently from those playoff push teams, like, I think Dan, like, to him, this is the year. Like he's in good spot. He probably is not going to get a top two seed now, like you kind of talked about earlier in the year, potentially.
Definitely not.
Which we were kind of sour on that he'd end up there, but like, okay, he could, like, right now he's clearly in the top four. He's like not going to have a bye, but like, make a trade or two, go in and stomp the 5-6 team, and then like, look, okay, you're in the semis. Anything could happen. Maybe you get some injury luck. Like, for him, look, you know, like, he'd rather have a year with a chance to make the final than like come in fifth or sixth place again. And then next year, he's going to be probably down again anyway. So like, or at least, and maybe he'll turn around. He has had better luck the last 3-4 years, but like, historically for his team, it would not be the end of the world for him to like have an off year, you know, like, he's not a manager that's trying to be like top six every single season. So, you know, maybe that's the push going forward now, but I think there's probably interest from him to pad his team up a little bit. I don't think he takes for granted where he is this season.
No, yeah, I think, and it's interesting actually, like, his team might be the biggest benefactor from the Julius Randle shoulder issue right now, because he has Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart on the bench, who are both having nice games right now. So like, he might be getting a bit of a boost with that happening, but like, yeah, like, Terry Rozier went to Miami, and that has, I mean, it's going to be a negative on Rozier's game. He's had a bad start so far with the Heat. Like, D'Angelo Russell, I think, has been playing really well, but he's going to get moved out of LA, and that's probably going to be a setback when he's like the sixth man or the third option for his new destination. And then Dan refuses to make a move to drop like Dario Saric.
I'm actually going through the moves right now. I'm trying to find when his last move was.
Oh god.
Because he's still at seven moves. I'm through 100 transactions and he's still not there.
it's pretty sad. Yeah.
And I know he's listening to these podcasts and we're telling him make some moves and he's just not doing it. And he has that time. Okay. January 9th was the last move he made. So 20 days ago, he added Kelly Oubre on waivers.
It was a waiver pickup.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I guess okay. That's why he's in the waiver pecking order at the moment. I don't know. I'm just saying, if he like goes down like 2-7 to me, and then like, you know, does like a 4-5 versus Trevier, and then goes 2-7 versus Andrew, then it's like,
cool. Well, yeah, I don't know why you think he's gonna go 4-5 versus Trevier. Like,
well, I mean, Trevier's at his lineups. I don't know. Like, Dan's team didn't barely beat Corey a couple weeks ago, so that's why I'm a little like, I don't know. Things seem to be sinking. I guess if if he's healthy, like LeBron's playing, Paul George is playing, he makes it work. But like, I don't know. It just seems like he's not managing the roster to account for if disaster does strike.
Trevier's team is weird. He lost to you 2-7 this week, but the week before he beat Garrett 5-4. He lost to John 2-7. He lost to me 1-7. And that was the week that gave me optimism that I could bounce back. I should have just made the trade after that week. He beat Corey 7-2, and then he had like seven losses before that in a row. And like only two of them were 4-5. And he started off the season with two wins. So weird year for Trevier. Very strange. But again, if you don't ever try to like upgrade your roster with like basic moves, it's it's not going to work out if your team's not great. And you gave him a D plus to start the, like, to your, this may be the best year for your power rankings ever. I think you gave Corey like a D minus. You gave Trev and I D pluses, and like we're in those spots. I think you had Eric just above us. I think you had Levy pretty good.
And
basically the comment was like, just hang in there. And like, we were concerned about him not hanging in about a month ago. And now he's been hanging in. And I have a feeling like now that he had this win this week, he's going to like perk up and try to get moving here. Like I think he could probably taste it. Like he could taste the playoffs. Like, and you have to, by the way, if you're over halfway through the season and you're in playoff position, like you got to start being like, let's bolster the roster here. You know, like what else, what's the reason? You don't need to make eight moves, but like being down a fourth round pick only is not the end of the world, you know, or being down like a fifth and an eighth is not the end of the world. Just do it. You know, people get
with
so
Paul. Do it with Paul. Come on, everyone.
It's not like you say Corey's like not gonna, like Corey has guys, like Corey has like Emmanuel Quickly is probably his late keeper, I would imagine now, right? Like he has Joel Embiid and he has probably Brandon Ingram or Fred VanVleet. And the other one is tradable. Okongwu is like a good, he averages a block a game.
He's got some pieces.
Everyone doesn't need to be a home run. Like you just gotta, like some teams just need like a little bit around the edges, especially if they're not like the best ad drop team. You know, Giddy, I don't know. My point is Corey doesn't have a ton of assets, but like he probably has two assets. Like there's enough, you know, looking at Trevier's team, like Trevier has Jokic now, obviously, and he has, who else he gonna keep? He's probably gonna keep Ja, I would imagine, or I guess Maxi. I don't know if Maxi's a late.
Yeah, I think the late one will be Ja because he drafted him like, you know, on the gun discount, right.
And Trey. So then, like, yeah. So he has Maxi to move. He has
someone like, has to go.
He or has should go. Aaron Gordon's a playable guy. DeAndre Ayton, like, yeah, he's not like sexy, but like. He averages 13, 10, a steal, and 0.7 blocks. Like, those are good numbers. Wendell Carter Jr., now that he's back healthy again, like, he's a solid player. There's people on every team. That's my point. Like, it's not as barren as you say it is. Like, yes, there's the chance that they won't want to do trades, but, like, if someone's giving them, like, I don't know that I've ever seen Corey. Like, first off, Corey, for all the years that he's been down, he always makes trades every single season. And Trevier, yes, is a weird manager when it comes to ad drops, but like when it comes to trades, if someone's giving him a fourth round, or not going to give him a fourth round for some of these guys, probably, but like if they're giving him a fifth for a 13th, he's not going to say no. Like there's players to be had here for sure. Yeah.
I'm just saying, Trevier's had a few draft boards in the most recent seasons where like he like could have moved to the deadline and like just chose to do nothing, which it was just like silly. Which I mean, could change. I would say a lot of it is like. A lot of it's just like finding the managers in the right mood, you know, like, and a lot of it's just like, I kind of like, look what happened with you in this Jokic deal. Like you have to, you know, you strike at the right time. The manager's got the itch and then, you know, the synergy happens and a trade is put in the books. Like a lot of stuff is marginal. It's like, you know, like you're moving pieces to get a little better. Or maybe you come out a little worse, but like, I don't know. You gotta like want to do it. That's like a lot of times, like when I'm trying to make a deal with people, like I'm just trying to find a manager who like wants to make a deal. Because a lot of, like if like you don't want to make a deal, it's just like that. I'm just like gonna have to kill myself to try and find a workable thing with you.
Yeah, I think over the years I've had that with Duran a lot. Where like a trade actually makes perfect sense. I'm not trying to rip him off or anything like that. But like he did a run through the Yahoo evaluator and it wasn't like a perfect match. Or like a clear advantage for him, he's not going to do it.
The arrows aren't all pointing up.
Yeah, right. I'm like, all right, like we're not going to do a deal here. Like I remember being, what's it called? It was Home Goods. I remember being in Home Goods and like texting him one time, and I'm like, this is never going to fucking work. Like, I'm done with this now. But okay, I'm clicking through Eric's roster, and this has to be the most confusing thing ever. Memphis has a power forward, I guess, named Gigi Jackson II.
Gigi? Come on now.
Well, it's just confusing. They have Triple J, who's Jaren Jackson Jr. and also Gigi Jackson II. Like It's a lot of like alliterative Jackson with like numbers. Like it's very strange to me.
You know what? Now that I'm looking at the name, I thought about picking him up at the time, but I didn't do it because I'm not convinced it was going to happen. But like, he's got like my initials reversed around the Jackson. I'm like, oh man, I should have grabbed this guy. That would have been some.
But then you would have accidentally dropped Triple G by accident, a Triple J by accident, confusing.
True.
You don't want that. Yeah, you don't want that. And then Eric also has Jaime Jaquez Jr., so he has like a triple J also, which is confusing. Man, you should trade him Triple J. And you should just keep the three of them next year.
That's a good, like, you know, like we're at the end of the deal process and he's like, I don't know. And then I just throw in, well, you know, the naming convention, like that's what gets it over the edge, you know?
I was saying, talking about willingness, like that is the thing that like often I've noticed over the years that like a stupid consolation of like something that doesn't matter often gets the trade over the finish line. It's like we're both 95% there, but like no one wants to budge. And it's like, let's do this dumb thing. That always works. That always helps push the trade forward, I think. People like that. So it's fun. It makes it more fun.
It's like when you come up with like a, we haven't done it in a while, but like when you have like a stipulation tied to the trade, you know, where it's like, oh, it's like he plays this many games or like, you know, like that kind of thing.
Oh, I love a stipulation. I think before the Jokic trade, my original push for, I was actually trying to, and John, if you're listening, you'll like this. I was trying to arbitrage somebody from
just the word arbitrage.
Yeah, well, John loves that. We all know this, right? Let me go to Trish roster. Who was I trying to get off his team? I have to go back to the texts, but it was like basically I was just trying to get like Kyrie, and actually it would have made a lot of sense for him. I was basically like lowballing him on Kyrie alone, and the idea was like I had offered him this like pick swap idea where if I retraded him later on, he would have the right to trade for the swap the pick with me. So like, for instance, let's say I traded to Trevier like an eighth for a 15th for Kyrie. And then later on, I traded Kyrie for like a fifth for a 12th. Trev would have the right to acquire the fifth for the eighth, basically.
Interesting.
Which I thought was a really interesting trade structure. Because basically my point was I'm taking the risk. And like, think about it right now, right? Like if Kyrie winds up being out for the rest of the year, like I'd be stuck with him basically because no one would want him. And so like, yes, Trev didn't get the full value of like at that moment, but if no one else was trading for him at that moment, like, all right, he's getting something for nothing basically, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting that, but then like if you chose to sell him, anything you sold for over the eighth round in value would just go.
I don't get it. But the point again was at the time I was just trying to boost my roster to try to play into the playoffs. So to me, it wouldn't really matter. Like to me, the value I'm getting for 3 weeks before I trade him again is worth the, like, and again, I'm not giving up the fifth rounder. I was only giving up an eighth rounder. Trevor's just getting the additional benefit of like, I'm absorbing additional risk. This is probably because I'm like, more on a finance function now. I'm probably thinking this way, like loans and like leverage and all this stuff. But like that was kind of the thought. Like I'm taking risk. Like if the loan defaults, the risk is all on me. But Trevor gets the upside of the sale.
Funny. Yeah, no, it's like I said. Yeah, I just go back to the mood of the managers. I'm like, I don't know. It's like. There seems to be some like low key energy in the league, I'd say. Like, I feel like Levy's been pretty active making moves and like enjoys getting involved in like the you know, the smack talk when it arises. Like Garrett obviously is like, he's Garrett has 71 moves. Like Garrett's about to pass Justin in moves. So this is like a very all in season from Garrett right now. So I would be kind of surprised if he doesn't make a push to pick up some talent to get over the playoff hump here.
I think it's been a pretty fun season, to be honest. Like, obviously, besides two managers, everyone's pretty engaged. Like, I don't know. And that's the thing. Like, you know, I'm glad you're out of the dark ages because I think if you were still in the dark ages for yourself, you'd maybe have a negative lens on what's going on. But, like, the reality is, like, people are still into it, you know? Like, people still want to win, like, I think especially as we get up towards the trade deadline, like a week or two from now, like it happens every year. It seems like it may be a little dead. People aren't talking much about it, but then like people would start smelling the cheap gold plated aluminum on the sternum, and they get that sniff and they say, you know what, like, why not me? And once that happens, like, we get closer and closer, I think, to it. So I think it's gonna be actually a fun end of the season here. I think everyone's gonna, you know, keep making effort. Like I do hope that like these five to nine teams, you know, there are people that show that they want to win. I hope, you know, I hope they're able to do it. I hope Dan pushes forward further. And look, and you top, you normal top, you Justin and Andrew, like your teams are well built. Like, you know, it's good that keep it all going too. I think this has been a good season so far.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it. I still think Justin's a paper tiger. Like, I feel like you and Gary both were pretty close to actually beating him, but just like, I don't know. So there's definitely there's some give in that roster still. Andrew seems like, I mean, he doesn't need to do a lot. I don't know. Yeah, like to me, Andrew's the kind of roster that if anyone should be approaching you to like get a Kevin Durant, like Andrew could throw some picks and be like, that's an upgrade, you know? Like, is Wagner a real upgrade for him? Who could say? I mean, you know, you have a Wagner versus like a whatever, like a another middle of the road player. But for him, like elite talent, like even Kyrie, like I feel like somebody, maybe Trevor brought him in the past. Like Kyrie, when you have like the elite roster, is like a gamble you could take. And it's kind of like, well, if, you know, if he doesn't work out, I'm still in a pretty good position, but like definitely could put me over the top.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, can we just talk about this real quick? Justin is a really interesting case right now. He only has three matchup losses right now. They came weeks 10 through 12. I don't know if he had injuries or anything that those weeks. But the losses were to Dan, Andrew, and Duran. 4-5, 3-6, 3-6. He beat you 7-2 the week before that Dan matchup. But it's pretty significant schedule luck that he plays Andrew once. He does play you twice. He doesn't play Dan twice. So like, I don't know. Like he beat Trev 8-1. He beat Eric 7-2. The you and him 7-2. Like, what happened that week? Did something happen? Like, I'm trying to look at this game.
I pulled it up. My team just wasn't good that week. My team, it took some time to kind of coalesce.
Yeah, wow. And you had six games on him too. Wow, he crushed you. Maybe his team was just hot that week.
My team wasn't like really performing that strongly until like the last like 3 or 4 weeks. We really like turned it on. Like I got Hardenstein after Mitchell Robinson went down. Like Jalen Johnson came back a few weeks ago from being injured. Like Grayson Allen, I picked up probably a month ago, and he's been great. Trey Jones was like one of the few moves Dan made, and I was able to pick him up, and he's been good once, you know, Pop said, maybe I should play my point guard and let Wemby, you know, dominate. Miles Bridges, you know.
Which by the way, we talked about that 2 weeks ago on the podcast, that, like, what is Pop doing? And I guess he's turned it around since then a little bit. Realized that, like, why am I playing Jeremy Sochan at point guard but not Wemby?
Yeah, now like Sohan's even playing great also. So it's like, yeah, for once a name that I actually know how to pronounce instead of you, I'll take it.
Great, great point. Good call out there, Ira.
Yeah,
I respect it.
Yeah, no. But yeah, no, my team has recently turned it on. Even like Chris Middleton, who like was kind of trash for the first like 6 weeks, is starting to get the efficiency again. So yeah. Better times for my roster, but still have a long way to go to at least get to like the Andy level. And at least now they have to fight for the one seed, because if you get the two seed, you're going to be fucked to have to face me in the semis. So, you know, something to keep them honest with one another.
That's true. Yeah. All right, before we pivot out of fantasy, Corey checking. I know you want to give an update there. What's Corey's status right now? Before you dive into this, people should be very aware of Corey's forfeited draft picks when trading with him. Probably. So go ahead and tell us where he's at.
Yeah, so it's been only a I think 2 or 3 weeks since we last potted, but we had to pull the band together for Paul's demise. So what? On January 1st, we had the first anti-ticking policy violation from Corey. Where he didn't set his lineup for 4 straight days. The way the policy is built, there is no penalty for the first failure. But unfortunately, January 21st, we saw a 4 day span from Jan 16th to 19th, where Corey failed to set his lineups correctly. So he is now down a 10th rounder. So it's more of like a surplus pick if it was involved in a deal. Because typically you have to give up a, well, I guess you could get a 10th back for a fourth, for example.
Depends on what rounds you swap, yeah.
So anyway, Corey's out a 10th rounder for next season. And the next penalty would be a fourth rounder. So I think so things do escalate pretty quickly from here. I think Dan did actually go 4 times maybe without doing it.
Yes.
Because I don't know if this was in effect when we had a serious conversation about Dan standing in the league or not.
Did we enforce it with him? That's what I'm trying to remember.
I don't know if this rule is it. We definitely had a lighter version of this rule in place. I think we did enforce it. I don't know though if like it might have been like the third time that like he had to get like the have a talk penalty. But yeah, that's twice for Corey. And as some people noted, it was like the same day that he was like going bowling when like the penalty came out the second time around. So I don't know. Corey's he did set his lineups, I think, after that announcement, but today's a new week. I don't think we really like clarify, but I think we're kind of saying like it's every week that you need to like, or at least like it should reset like when a new week begins, kind of thing. But he didn't set his lineups today either. So,
It's so easy just to go in the app once, like once a week, you just hit the button. Well, I will say Yahoo's the button's terrible. Like I have noticed now for someone who's inactive like Corey, it's not terrible because you do it, you set it for the week, and it's not going to move. But I've noticed that like, let's say on Thursday, I have it set for the rest of the week, then I go add a player, right, and I put that player into the starting lineup. It will undo. Like it won't just affect that one spot. It'll undo every move I did Friday through Sunday setting the lineup. So like after you add someone, you have to hit the button again, or else it screws it up.
For the ads.
Yeah. But like again, he's not making moves, so it should be as simple as going in Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday and hitting the
One day. Just pick a day. Any day will suffice.
Just not Thursday. Just not Thursday unless you've already done it Monday through Wednesday. You know, that's all it takes. That's all it takes.
It's not going well for Big Red in the fantasy landscape. And like you said, there is some talent here. Like, I mean, you didn't even mention like Brandon Ingram earlier.
I did. No,
Okongwu's
I did.
okay. Santi
I mentioned
Aldama's
them.
gonna be a late season stalwart for the Grizzlies. So it's Brandon Miller is actually playing better too. So I mean there's some names that are like kind of tempting. But I mean it's really like now like you saw Brandon Miller like right now after he dropped 20 points like in 5 out of the last 7 games, because in like 2 weeks he's probably not gonna do any of that. So yeah, I don't know. It's just like
Do you have inside information on another gun charge or?
another gun. What do you mean? Is this Brandon Miller? Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's the guy. I don't know anything about Brandon Miller and guns right now, but I don't know. Charlotte.
All that proves is your Big Ten loyalty that you don't even pay attention to like SEC basketball issues and all that. I respect it, Aaron. All right, we actually had like this is the longest we've gone on fantasy for I think for a long time. Let's
I'm
do
really. I'm proud. I'm proud of our trade conversation. Like, I don't think we ever like we're innovating here. Like, I think this is probably like one of our best pod seasons that we've ever had. Besides, like the COVID years where like we just went bullshitty and like
I
basically
think it's
made
two
something out of
things.
nothing.
I think it's two things. One, yeah, well, three things. One, we've been doing this for a while now. We're hitting some strides. Two, you've come out of this dark. Like you were pretty like depressed about this like a year ago.
Last season, yeah, I was definitely.
I do think the turnaround was like we had that conversation. We can talk about it. We had a conversation where it's like you and I like you were like, oh, we should stop doing the pod, and I'm like, oh, but we like doing it. Who cares if anyone listens to it or not? We have fun doing it, right? And then you're like, oh yeah, like that actually makes sense. So like that, beyond the general malaise of the league, I think that mentality for you is like, I like doing this. Let's just have fun with it. And then three, I think I finally found my alcohol of choice for the podcast. I think I'm better on wine than I am on whiskey. I think the whiskey, I'm too slurry the whole time. This I could kind of pontificate without kind of losing my train of thought as easily. So I think it's those three factors are that really made this a good pod season. But let's pivot here. And I will note to the listeners, we have said many times that, you know, Ira does all the work on the show. I did send for the first time probably, maybe since the first or second podcast, I have sent the rundown for this podcast. So I'm very impressed with myself today.
Probably the first time, yeah. I honestly can't recall you ever.
Were you shocked when that came through your email, or?
I was pleasantly surprised. You know, a few things pleasantly surprised me, Paul. So you know, that was a good job by you.
Yeah, I know I'm in your doghouse right now, so I had to do something to get out. Let's skip to the bottom of the rundown real quick, and we'll come back to. We're gonna end with challenge talk. Sure. So we'll that's gonna isolate half the people that listen to this probably. But let's do a parenting check-in. How are things going over at Wells Mansion over there?
Yes, the Wells warehouse is we're still booming. He's a good place. So I think I mentioned to you over the weekend we made the trek to Long Island. And that was a successful adventure. So we left early in the morning, kept the drive to like a little over an hour. And we came back, late at night to keep the drive also to like a little over an hour. So he slept most of the drives. We did our first probably successful like transition from sleeping in one destination, sleeping in the car, sleeping at home for the night afterwards. And that seemed to go pretty nicely. I feel like we're making some good strides there. So, I still sleeps in the bedroom. That will remain something to work on, as he enters his teenage years. but yeah, I think we're in good shape. We're currently in intense stroller negotiations.
What does that mean?
We're having hesitations about having a hand-me-down stroller.
I did warn both of you individually about this.
Did you?
When you were registering, I said, because I know your aunt gave you an older stroller. And I'm like, just put a new one on the registry and like someone's going to buy it for you. But now you missed the boat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't fucking know. Well, now we're socializing with other new parents and it's like, I can't show up to these things with a hand-me-down stroller.
Well, that's the problem. It's as social as it is anything, Ira. Kind of semi on topic here. You know the Stanley water bottles that are like all the rage?
I do, oddly enough, a podcast talk about it.
So, all right, yeah, because like the white women love this. Like Amy's sister has like three of them. So I like apparently today it came out that they have lead. There's like lead in them.
Oh, lead poisoning.
Yeah. So it's now done basically.
Damn.
And so I shared this with my brother-in-laws and my sister-in-laws, and one of them is like responded back like about how kids at school have been getting bullied for bringing other brands. I'm like, this is how it's always been. Like, I remember like showing up to school and like not the cool sneakers and getting like comments at me for that. Like, this is America. This is how it's always been. Like, you don't show up with the cool stuff. Someone's going to give you shit for it. Like, it's the same thing with the strollers. Like, especially in Hoboken, Jersey City, if you don't have the new, Up a Baby Vista stroller or whatever, like people are going to give you shit. Like, that's just how it's going to go. So, but that said, if you like your stroller, you don't have to do anything about it. But if you don't, there's options out there. Yeah, but you should have registered for it, like I told you.
Expensive options, but yes.
They're like $1,000. We actually just bought basically what was happening was Joey was like anti-stroller all her time living in Hoboken. Then Charlie was born, and she got jealous of him every time he's in the stroller. So we wound up having to buy a double stroller. So we're actually going to sell... We're gonna sell our Vista stroller. We always had two strollers.
I got attach-ons, Paul. I can help you out. You want to do a little stroller switcheroo? We could talk. We could probably tie us into a fantasy deal. Actually, this could get us over the finish line.
I think a Vista stroller in pretty good condition is worth a third round pick. That's, I mean,
that's bullshitting.
Oh, she's upset now.
And now we're talking. Yes.
What stroller do you have right now?
We have the Upper Baby.
Which one?
Which one? You think I know my stroller? My stroller serial number?
Ask her. She's standing right there.
She doesn't want to discuss it. Oh, boy. All right.
Wow, Leanna's killing the parenting corner. Just we're going to air that out. All right, we'll pivot here. You know, anyway, my point was we got a double stroller that I didn't want to pay for, but like we're going to sell the other one to hopefully make the money back. And I love the double stroller. It's great. It's cool. But yeah, there's always an issue with the strollers. You know.
All right. Let us move forward.
Before you get murdered during the podcast. Yeah. Good idea. I will say also good to hear you did that trip. We still have anxiety about like the kids falling asleep somewhere, transferring them to the car and then transferring them home. It's still a big deal. So that's a pretty bold move by you guys. So when you're trying to get back in Leanna's good graces, let her know I said that in about 20 minutes.
Good to know. Good to know. But yeah, we do have, I don't know. I feel like it's like we're building up quite the anticipation here in the parenting circles throughout the state for Chris and the Noise coming to a Hoboken near you on March 7th now.
8th. Friday, March 8th. 8th.
Friday, March 8th. Thank you. And now we have it's confirmed that there's dueling pianos prior to the event.
So there, I mean, whether we do it or not is to be determined, but Wicked Wolf does have dueling pianos on Friday. So we could go there beforehand if we want to, because Kristen doesn't go until 10. So we could in theory go there first, or we could pregame in our hotel since Justin's staying there. Also Andrew's staying there. Garrett might be coming out and staying there though. Obviously, he's going soft on us a little bit. So we'll see if he actually shows up. But I think it should be – and you're in for this event?
Yeah, I'm good to go. Yeah, I think Leanna will probably stay behind to take care of the little one. But, yeah, I should be all systems go on my end. I have no issues. But, yeah, I've been doing pianos is effective, though, because, well – I guess we'll see what time people get there, but 10 o'clock's past a lot of folks' bedtime. So, you know, we're going to need somebody to keep us going throughout the warm-up period.
For sure. I was joking with Scott that we're just like, we'll spend like $300 at dueling pianos, getting the songs we want played. And then like, we'll just go to Chris and the Noise and hear all the ones we want to hear played anyway. But yeah, like I think it's gonna be good. I think Scott is coming up too. I'm not totally positive. But we'll see. It should be good. It should be good. I figured Leanna's gonna stay in, but like you deserve to go. You are an original Kristen supporter, having traveled to the depths of what, Easton, Maryland, Elkton, Maryland. What was it?
It was. I think it was Easton.
Okay.
You know, you're right. It's Elkton. Yeah.
Elkton.
Yeah. Good memory. The milk bar. Yeah. She's come a long ways from the milk bar, I must say. I expect this place to be a lot better than Chris and the Noise was.
Oh boy! All right, for sure. You're anyway, all right. So we have that coming up. That'll be fun. Everyone should come to that.
Oh wow! This is right, to our new council. I don't know. That's funny.
What happened?
Nothing. Leanna texted me back with a picture. I guess there's a new picture of Levy out on Facebook or something. He looks so professional. He's come a long way.
Well, have they seen the Levy picture? I mean, that is the most professional of all pictures.
I did. I enjoyed your picture today of Levy. That was I appreciate your interpretation. One of my pet peeves is interpretive art, because I'm very against the artist telling me I need to figure out what I see in the picture, because I don't need to know what I think. I already know what I believe. I want the artist's interpretation. So, like, I missed the whole, like, Levy, like, the Levy meddling in the background of the you and Garrett, what's the word?
Defibrillation.
Defibrillation, thank you. Yes, this is the wine serving you well.
All right, let's do it. So, if you don't watch the challenge, like, thanks for listening. It's time to log off now. This is not for you. All right. We've never talked about the challenge on this podcast, probably for the broader audience. Even though we've gotten to Rutgers, that like no one cares about. No one cares about it. But like at the same time, like people have been our friends forever, so they're like tangentially in the circle of Rutgers. And like, but like, you know, this is different. This is probably very few of us here. But I just want to talk to you about it. How have you, so we're on season 39 right now. Let's first talk about like how have you enjoyed the season so far?
All right, fine. We'll zoom in on this first. And I guess we'll say for those that might just be listening along, like, you know, the Real World, which everyone's watched, became the challenge. Like ex-Real Worlders went on to the challenge, which is more like physical competition. Because I do feel like most, like there's a lot of like secret challenge fans out there, you know? So like even amongst our listeners, like it wouldn't shock me if somebody was like, oh yeah, I watched like season 37, just like randomly. But season 39, they decided to do like a, like kind of like a cast reset. They're like, the theme is a non-champion. So like there's gonna be a new champion because nobody on the cast has won one yet. Which they've done before.
But no rookies, which is kind of a new premise.
None of them rookies?
No. Some of them have not been on the MTV show before, but they've all been on a challenge before.
Well, yeah. Well, the challenge is like a – I don't know if it's like a representation of like all of TV, but like the franchise itself has like gone through so many like manipulated forms.
We'll get there.
Okay, yeah, we'll get there. Anyway, so I am enjoying the show, but I think I feel like I'm not the general. Like I like a show that like there's like some good intensity.
I don't care about the general audience. I'm not asking about the general audience, Ira. I'm asking about what are your thoughts on the season?
My interpretation of the arts, yes. I'm enjoying the season. I like the like. There's becoming like two factions that are like kind of coming to grips.
Factions.
Oh, yeah, good one.
Right. Got you back.
Bound to happen. But yeah, and like I mean I like the cat. I'm trying to put my finger on it. There's just like there's good tension. Like it could be better tension. Like it's not like the most like maybe like intelligent kind of clashes that are taking place, but it's tension nonetheless, and I appreciate like having some like turbulence in the house that's like making it difficult for people.
Yes. I think for the first time in a while, and I think because it's so many different people who, and a lot of them kind of had semi-friendships outside the house. It's non-fabricated emotional tension. Like people really, because they haven't played the game with that many people, they don't really know who to trust. So they have these trusts, and then the trust is broken, and then they're like really second guessing. I think it's been a really intriguing season on a gamesmanship level. I think the cast has held up their part of the deal. That's my thought. I think production has not quite held up their part of the deal. I think the game format this season has been fairly lame. I think the concept of like them working together to gain money, that wasn't terrible. I think the chaos thing was like, you know, you bring back these legends and you don't give them like interesting stuff to take people out. Like really, it should have just been like, don't take their money away. Just like have them have CT come in and do a hall brawl. Have Cara Maria come in and do like some monkey climbing shit. Like have them come beat a champion at their game. Like that's what this is supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. And it, like Michelle beat Cara Maria because everyone else was helping her see the pieces and no one was helping Carm. Like it wasn't really great. So I think the game and this new level that they're at now, yes, the factions are interesting, but like it's not going to be that interesting of voting now because of how this mechanism, like there's no real reward for coming in first place. And it's a little bit unbalanced right now.
I mean, I would say I don't think the last vote is representative. Well, the last vote was actually very interesting, but I think, right? No, the last vote was simple. Excuse. Well, the last vote was just like
it was a chain. It was an obvious chain.
Yeah, I was thinking it was malicious. Yeah.
But to your point, that was fascinating. That like this person who was so we could say the names. Everyone listening now knows who we're talking about. Jay, who allegedly his number one or number two girl was Nerisse all season. Jay was Nerisse's number one guy. And he literally decides, he manufactures this idea of, I'm going to make her cry, basically, because of what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
That's fascinating TV. And it's going to bite him, I would imagine, at some point. I think the short-ended team has the talent to win a daily challenge. It is going to be weird to see with any of these dailies how girls are going to even win in the next few weeks going forward, like, because it's not a level playing field. But it's all and there's been a lot of backstabbing and like people really more so taking it personally than in the past. So that has been intriguing. I think the cast does, like, for the first time since like the initial British infusion of like Bear, Kyle, Georgia, since that class, this has been the class that's given the most life, I think, to the franchise in a very long time.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah. It's hard to think of a new group that was, I will say, like, as you were talking, like, it reminded me a lot of, like in Survivor, they have, like, returnee seasons, but they also have, like, they more so have, like, newbie seasons. And the newbie seasons get, like, what we're seeing here in the challenge, which is, like, people are a lot more emotionally invested. They don't understand, like, they can't grasp the whole, like, it's a game, like, people are playing to win, people are playing for money, and, like, they just, like, expect, like, the loyalty to extend into the game always. Which I think is, like, definitely, like, what a lot of this is. The other factor that, like, we haven't hit on is, like we haven't gotten, like, the classic challenge payoff of, like, seeing tons of, like, sex on TV. But, like, all the relationship dynamics that this season has had have created a lot of, like, surprising alliances and connections that, like, wouldn't have happened if it was, like, the usual challenge cast of returnees who are, like, above the whole hookup dynamic, and or even the hookup, they're just going to use you for clout. Like, they're not going to, like, protect you.
The relationships this season have literally made the entire game interesting. You have Nerisse, who is in that core four with Jay, Michelle, and Asaf, right? Hook up with Horacio, who's, they're essentially their negative one person. Like, he's at the bottom of their list. And, like, and then Olivia is best friends with Nerisse and Horacio. And for some reason, she thought that they convinced her that Horacio was not on her side. And I think it was honestly because she felt left out by the two of them. And now she's realizing, like, these are my actual friends. Like, then you have James and Mariah's hookup, and James has literally thrown everybody else on his team to the wind to play Mariah's game. And it's kind of worked for him, to be honest. But, like, it's all – and the one payoff we didn't get was Callum hooking up with Michelle with a girlfriend at home. And we never got a payoff for that, unfortunately.
It was the reunion still, so, you know.
That would have been great because she's going to cry big time for sure.
Yeah, no, that's definitely coming down the line. I think this reunion should be really good considering, like, how many, like, of these relationships, like – completely fizzled out once the game ended. Like, it'll be interesting to see them, like, press on it and what they're able to get out of people.
Yeah, but you're also right that, like that's like your Survivor analogy, like, because the problem with the game, like, the game is getting stale because they kept bringing back the same vets back to back to back to back seasons, so there was never any confusion of who was working with who. And this season, not only was there intrigue of who's working with who, but they actually showed it. They actually had people in their interviews talk about, this is why I did this move, and here's what I'm thinking about when I'm considering who to vote for. And, like, you know, even the weeks where it kind of went chalk, there was some real consideration of, like, how am I going to play this game and what's going on behind the scenes. And that really made it pretty interesting. I can't remember ever having a season where we kind of knew what was going on like that.
I mean, they definitely do it. But, like, they don't always give it to you up front. Like, I mean, we can kind of segment off here. Like, for example, Challenge USA season 2. Like, that was a very intense alliance season where, like, they were making it pretty apparent, like, what sides everyone was on. Like, you know, with, like, the whole Australia faction with, like, a little bit of USA. And then, like,
Survivor strong, Big Brother strong. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Is that right? Well, no, different. I'm talking about the one with – like Danny and Sarah Lucina, and like they had the Kaz season that Kaz and Jordan won. They had
that was,
USA, oh,
that was,
UK,
that was,
Australia.
That was World Championship.
Oh, World Championship, excuse me.
Yeah, USA 2 was the one that
my bad.
That. I don't even remember. But like, so I mean, well, I guess let's pivot to that. Do you like these CBS challenges, and like, how does it stack to you with like the MTV ones?
Right. Well, so we've seen a few different variations. So like, we just season 39 that we've been talking about is alumni who have played the game before, so they at least like understand like I think the tone of the show, which I think is valuable, and like they've all played with like vets who taught them how to like what we're trying to get here with this franchise. But like, you know, like the first USA season was completely like, it was like Big Brother type atmosphere, which to me is like just boring. Like I enjoyed it because I knew some of the Survivor people on the cast, but like there's no like, the tension is like minimal. The games are wacky. The house, like the budget was cheap. It was like low grade challenge. Like the World Championships won better, but like also like CBS products, which I feel like, well, there's another conversation about CBS versus MTV because they're becoming one entity. But like, I feel like the challenges and MTV are becoming more CBS. But
well, they have to, unfortunately. Like, so, and well, I mean, let's talk. So, all right, well, let me give my perspective here. I didn't watch USA 1. I watched the World Championship because I thought it'd be interesting. I found it completely boring. I stopped halfway through. I did watch USA 2, which is the one where, like, to me, that was great. It was an hour of TV. I thought for the first time in a while, the challenges and the eliminations were interesting and good for TV. The factions were a little too obvious. Like, it was Survivor versus Big Brother versus like vets, and they wouldn't call the Big Brother people that were on, like Josh and Fessy, they were calling them Big Brother, not vets. Like we've all seen them on MTV. Like we know they're vets. Like obviously they're playing both sides here. So it was weird to me that they wouldn't acknowledge that. So that was kind of annoying, and it's boring when it's literally like, who won the challenge? Oh, like this alliance won. Like, let's just get another alliance out and like minimize their, like the gameplay's not great, but some of the people were good. That said, I found this MTV season so much more interesting because of that emotion that like the people on MTV who are just like younger and like more willing to do shit, it's just better. The problem is there's no pipeline for these people anymore. Like where do you pull from? There's no MTV shows producing characters anymore.
Well, they've kind of, yeah. I mean, the pipeline that existed, I think they kind of just have like thrown out, and now it's, I mean, now it's just you have a lot of followers. If you did any TV show, like I think actually like Nerys like never did a show, but she got on because like she was friends with, I guess Nelson. She was his like ally.
His ride or die.
Yeah, his ride or die. So like, I mean, they'll find a way if like they want to get somebody. Like a lot of these people like just don't have any shows anymore, even. But it's like, I don't know, UK, Turkey, Romania, we'll take you if like, it's honestly hard to understand why they, like the way they are doing it. Like, I don't think they have like a real, like long-term, like, I don't think they have long-term vision.
There was a lot of rumbling that after 40, they were going to cancel the MTV one.
Cancel? I mean, and what, it's just going to become, I mean, they could do like international and do... Now there's the all like challenge all stars,
but like the world one was terrible. Like the people from like Argentina were like the worst thing that I've ever seen in my entire life. Apparently, the challenge UK was horribly boring. Even though we see this season that there were really good people from like, Kieran was really interesting. James has been pretty interesting. Zaza has been pretty interesting. Kaz. So there's good people from it.
It's just, it was like, crying when Zaza lost.
Like, so it's how do you find people? You're right. Like, you got to keep finding these diamonds in the rough that should just be on reality TV. I don't know how you do it, but like, you got to find a way. Like, Nerys has been out. She's carried the season, in my opinion. Between her and like, I'm trying to think who else has like carried the season. But it's really been her. Like,
well,
I love her.
I mean, the main characters are Michelle and Jay. I mean,
but everybody hates them. They're just
right. They're the villains at this point.
They're the same way that like Josh and Fessy. Like, people don't like watching them. And Casey, no one likes watching Casey.
Casey is boring. Jay and Michelle are good team. Like what Jay did, Jay's embracing the villainy, which I mean, you need.
He thinks he's the main character, and he is like anyone who does anything he doesn't like they're awful, and he's crying in their face about it. Like, it's awful. And I'm glad Michelle actually called him out on it this past week. It was about time. And like Norris like calmly confronted him, and he's like, "Well, you don't like it was a guy's week, and like you made a chance for me to go in." And she's like, "Not really. Like you could have done the same thing. You could have voted the same. You could have changed your vote too." But like,
well, I mean, when there's two movements happening, and you're one person who decides I want to go my own way, it's a little different than you know saying, "Well, you should jump off your entire movement to you know, join my one-way street." I don't know. It's a little. I don't know. I feel like it's a little more like Norris and Olivia are accepting what the consensus is instead of
well, because they've done the math and they're like, oh, we're not at the top of this alliance anymore, you know? Like,
yeah, but they're still protected. They're still perfectly fine. They're not number one in the alliance who calls the shots, but like not everyone can be number one. That's simply how it works. I mean, you could still be happy you're making the final with the loser alliance who like could be in the final.
That's fair. All right, so I think we both like what's going on. I wish MTV would just go to an hour format. Like the biggest problem with the MTV one is just that like
you don't want 90 minutes?
Because it's not. It's like you're getting maybe 10 more minutes of content than the hour episode, like just stretched over an additional 30 minutes. There's so many commercials and it's like we're not seeing that much. I don't know. I don't need all that time with all these people. But or especially once like once like Tori's back and like, I'm actually like, I don't know. We'll see who's cast on 40. Are you excited for 40? Like, in theory, it's gonna be good.
I think it'll
be good. Hopefully they brought along the right people from this past season. Hopefully, there's no like rookie. I guess who I'd want to see from like the USA season. I'd want to see like Michaela. Like to me, she's the perfect person to add to the MTV mix. Like she's gonna like muck things up. She like she's nuts in her own way. We just gotta find the people who are characters and like elevate them. And like, I think the show needs to be done with the Big T mold. Like, what does Big T bring into this franchise anymore? Like, they've obviously invested in her.
I don't know, girl power.
They've always liked having like the mold of like the underdog of like, but there's always gonna be an underdog. Like, you don't need someone who can't do anything and never has a chance of winning. Like.
Well, yes, that's another
like,
issue.
Like even like
UK audience. Anissa
was always an elimination beast the last few years. Like, Jemmy at least brought real drama and entertainment.
Oh yeah,
like Big T's not bringing that. Like we got to cut ties with these people who are just like, and I don't know if part of the problem, and we've talked about this in the past, is like part of the problem is that because everything has to be like a little more PC than it used to be. You can't like Jemmy doesn't really exist in this universe anymore. You can't bring in someone like that who's just going to be like calling people out all the time because it's just not acceptable anymore. So I guess Big T is the alternative to that. It's just not that great of television.
Wait, I'd rather have who doesn't more, exist. What was the name?
A Jemmy. Like
oh Jemmy.
Yeah.
They still. I don't know. I think. I mean, they have to do it in the right way. Like Amanda's like a fucking nut job on the show, but like. I don't know, you can't get racial, like, you can't get, I don't know, like, you know, you just have to, like, mind the lines on a few things.
Yeah, and, then, like, they just got to bring back the real world, that's what it comes down to, like, again, you can't get rid of, like, the problem is that everyone just goes on these shows to be influencers, which is, like, they kind of accept that and be like, all right, fine, that's what's happening, but you got to bring people back who are going to prove that they're going to be a fun time. That's what it always was about in the real world, is, like, people want to come here, they want to, like, they want to be real. They want to like do stupid shit because they're young and they're cool with that. And that's it. Like, that's not what the Big Brother people are. That's not what the Survivor people are. Those people are there to play games. You need to find people who are not just there for like the gamesmanship because it doesn't make for like those people are the worst on TV. It's not fun.
Yeah. Well, no. Once again, I've seen Survivor seasons with game bots, and yeah, I mean game bots. Yeah. I mean the game can be interesting, but it gets old. And yeah, you don't get 40 seasons out of that. So
no, it's fun. It's fun. You need the drama mixed in because also that's what makes like to your point. GameBots is a great description because the game just becomes robotic otherwise. What made this season great that we're watching is that like these romances happen or like people's these slights happen and people get mad and try to turn the game on its head. Like it's all those little slights that make it all very interesting. So all right, good. I'm glad we're on the same page here. I think it's been good. Hopefully they finish strong. Hopefully like Horacio and Kylan aren't just going into elimination every week for the rest of the season here, because that'd be pretty lame.
The final can't be too much further away. So.
I'm pretty upset that like Ed and Emmanuel both didn't like look at each other last week and were like, why are we still working with these people? Why shouldn't we just work with like?
Because they'll beat them in the final.
But Ed and Emmanuel have confidence in their abilities. Like they're good competitors. The two of them should just be like, if we ally with Horacio and Kylan, one of the four of us is going to win every single daily going forward, and we're safe. Like, to me, that's the math.
I don't know. I feel like I'm...
Especially with this chain of command, the goal should be to tie yourself to as many strong players as possible. Because the whole point is that the closer you are to the best player, the closer you are to being safe. So if the four strongest players are all working together, like why be tied down by Michelle? She's not going to win a daily in anything. What's the value now at this point?
That's a good point. I guess have they confirmed that the voting will always be this chain thing? I guess I wonder if that's the case.
TJ can always change it. I kind of want like at some point, isn't TJ going to be like, I don't want these fucking weaklings running my final. I need to make a change to this game because like they're literally putting the strongest people in every week and they keep coming back and it's like, this is ridiculous. I don't know. I'm just hopeful that Michelle or Jay loses the daily challenge soon and like puts the game upside down.
I mean, yeah. Jay's not a slouch, so if it's not physical, he might win, to be honest. But like he'll do well in the final. Michelle will get destroyed in the final, I think. I don't know. It's...
My coworker, who's this Survivor watcher, really does not like Michelle or Jay either. She's like, by the way, the rumors are true. Michelle did not deserve to win in Survivor.
Oh no, I was definitely on Team Aubrey for Survivor, not Team Michelle. It was a strange season. People were petty that season, and like just like wanted like to do like a vengeful vote against the other girl, but I don't know. Michelle, I give Michelle credit. She's found a mold on MTV, and you know, like I don't think she's not like boring. You know, she's interesting. So I don't know. I see Jay the same way, where he's just like sometimes like when he doesn't want to like cause conflict, he's kind of boring. But like he knows how to make TV.
I think the second the vets are back, though, they're back to being like every week in elimination. Like
they're
not well liked.
If they make season 40, yes, they will be going in early.
Yeah, because like the reality is, I mean, every other time Jay and Michelle have been on, they were the first people in elimination until they got out, basically. Because they know Jay can run a final in theory, but like no one wants to be
in a one-on-one. He's not much of a threat. Yeah,
right. Yeah. They manipulated everyone this season to forget about that, basically. So.
Just sees everyone's friends with them. They just came in with a bunch of friends. So, I mean, it's a good advantage.
But it's obviously they made these friends for a game. Like, it's pretty clear.
It's pretty clear. They need them, you're saying?
They spent a year making friends with these people just for the game.
I don't know about that.
They're so manipulative. I mean, come on. Michelle literally refers to everyone as one of her close friends outside the house. Literally every single every week, it's a different person. She's like, I'm really close with her outside that. Like, you don't have 15 best friends.
She's a Hoboken person, you know? They don't have to roll in many social circles.
Yeah, I feel like I like Michelle in real life. I just don't like her on the show. Like, she's insufferable. the fact, like, great, she is entertaining. But the fact that, like, everything's about her and is a constant stream of, like, paranoia.
Oh, yeah, that stuff was like, pretty, yeah.
Like, relax. Like, just chill. Like,
yeah, no, it's definitely.
And it actually sucked that Laurel came the week that she thought she was coming, because it just, they probably edited that to, she probably said that like at the very beginning, like after the first week, and they probably edited it or whatever to make it happened that week, but
yeah, they talk about these people like every week. That's definitely taking place. I mean,
have you noticed? So I saw on Twitter this was going on this season for the interviews. They made them wear the same outfits every single time. You probably noticed Norris. The same.
Well, they always have like an outfit that like they do like the post game interviews in. I feel like
no. Literally, not post game, like the actual interviews, like the confessionals or whatever.
They never have a different outfit on for their interviews?
This season, because Norris posted last season how she had like 15 different looks for those, and this season the MTV made them wear the same exact outfit and do their hair the same way, so that they could intersperse when they were saying certain things in the episodes that it made sense to say it.
Interesting. Yeah, well, that's smart on their part.
Yeah.
To finally close that loop.
Yeah. All right. I have nothing more to say on this. I think this is I'm glad we're on the same page here. I'm excited for 40. Hopefully it'll come out soon.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't know. It's an interesting moment to assess. I mean, but yeah, 40 is a completely different animal. And then we'll see what the franchise does after that.
Well, we'll see. Like, I feel like MTV always hypes these things up like, oh, 40 is going to be huge. And like, it may just wind up being like, we got Tori and Devin again. And like,
I know you touched on it, but the Olims this season have been like, I don't horrible. Know who the fuck comes up with like thinks that these are good TV products, because it's very simple. Make it fucking physical. Like, I heard the theory that like they don't want to injure people on 39 because they might want to use them on 40, like the champs, which like, all right, fine, I could theoretically, that makes some sense, but like
it makes some sense, but then also like the whole thesis of the season is like, come prove it, right? Like, that's the whole thesis. Like, okay, show us you're a boss. Like, show us you can hang with the real people, because like, I don't know.
Or fucking pay the money to bring Sarah Rice back and do a puzzle if like you don't want to fucking do anything physical like hurt somebody. Like, I don't know.
Right.
You gotta get creative here. If you want to avoid the physical stuff, don't put Darrell in a stupid challenge.
That said, like, I will say, most of them were bad. The Jordan one was worth like that. That might go down as one of my favorite eliminations of all time. When he literally intentionally let Kieran win, and he's like, "I figured out the game. I'm just gonna beat him now." And like, he just fucking like, that's the most Jordan thing ever. It was so good. But that's pretty stupid. That's what they did. And also, I will say, Challenge USA. They finally figured out like, oh, all these daily challenges are really good for TV. Oh, all these eliminations are good for TV. Why couldn't they do it for 39? It was the filming close together. Is that what the problem was?
I don't know. Yeah. That's true. Even, challenge. Yeah, Challenge USA has some good ones. I don't understand it. Like, any elimination where it's like we're spending half our time like doing like slow motion like segments, like clearly like, you don't have the footage. Like, you don't have anything that's fun to watch. Like
I don't know if people do math problems. It's boring. Like, you know, you bring CT to do math?
Yeah, that was like, those are some podcast episode titles. CT does math. All right. I think we're good.
I think we're good.
We covered our challenge basis. I'm glad we got to send your team off. I'm glad you'll be able to carry the league these next few weeks at least. So, it's not too boring in trade season. And we'll see what the playoffs have to offer.
Get your proposals in, guys. If you got to be in it to win it. So get them in. Get those draft picks nice and high. So, all right, good potting. I'll talk to you soon.
Rest in peace.